Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, the Titans about to play on Monday Night Football, which I'm sure all of America is rejoicing about to watch them next Monday as they take on the Miami Dolphins. We were discussing Miami earlier. They're the number one seed in the AFC right now, 9-3 overall. And yet you look at their schedule, and they've beaten one team that's at 500, and that's the Denver Broncos, who they beat 70-20. And other than that, not a whole lot of good teams that they've beaten on that list. So how do you view the Dolphins as things stand today at 9-3, currently the number one seed in the AFC?
Well, yeah, as you said, that win also over the Broncos at that time didn't feel like the most impressive win. The Broncos, I think, were still sorting some things out, especially on defense. You saw roster changes after that. But, you know, when you look at Miami, I think everybody knows that December into January is really where we're going to find out exactly what the measuring tape is. They're going to face Dallas at home. They're going to go to Baltimore, and then they're going to face Buffalo at home. And that's probably a game where Buffalo's going to be either trying to get into the playoffs or positioning is going to be extremely important at that stage. So, you know, I think at this point, as you said, the schedule has not been, you know, the wins have not been against world beaters, especially when you look at, you know, the previous games against, let's see, Jacksonville, 30-31. Oh, well, that's going back to preseason, excuse me, Buffalo, 48-20 loss. The Eagles 31-17, and then Kansas City 21-14. So they still got a lot to prove. But, you know, the one thing that I don't think anybody denies about Miami is there's a ton of speed. You know, Chan, the running back, when he's healthy, you know, he's had knee injuries this year, but when he's not healthy, that offense is about as dynamic as it gets. Tyreek Hill is legitimately somebody that I think you're going to see is going to get some MVP votes this year. I'm not saying he's going to win it, but he's definitely going to get some MVP votes. And, you know, the offense under Mike McDaniel is about as dynamic as it gets in the NFL right now. So, but, you know, yeah, there's still a lot for the Dolphins to prove. And I think, you know, defensively, again, if you're going to ask questions about them, it's going to be defensively down the stretch, whether or not they can just hold opponents down. They've given up a lot of points and against the bigger threats this season. So important game, I think, though, for Tennessee, because it's going to be, as you said, prime time. A lot of people are going to be talking about the Titans. All those primetime games are always fun because they put a microscope on both teams, and sometimes you have a team that is having a down season, and so what they end up talking about is what's going on with the head coach, what's going on with, you know, the general manager, where are the cracks in the organization, and we're going to see the Titans really, I think, get that microscope this week. And, you know, at an interesting time right now, because as we've talked about on the show and a lot of the pieces that are being written right now, it's about the, you know, the functionality of Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon and what's going to happen with these two guys when the season ends.
Do you have any new thoughts in that regard since you brought it up?
Yeah, I thought you would ask me that. I don't, you know, I don't. I know you guys were discussing some of the stuff that's been written about the relationship right now. And I will say that to me, when anytime you get a situation where you have a head coach who's going to be coveted when the season ends, and I think Mike will be by New England, that doesn't mean that he's asking for it. But again, I do think that if New England moves on from Bill, Mike is going to be a guy that they are going to be very interested in. There is an effort, I think, in the organization to go like, hey, look, we want to be able to showcase that things are in a working order here. And so, you know, I think you do get pieces that get written because, you know, you have a head coach and a general manager that want to be out there reflecting what's positive going on in their relationship. And I do think, though, historically, when you look at marriages like this, there's a year, if they work out, there's a year of adjustment, you know, between the two. You're learning each other's language. You're learning how each person functions with the media. You're learning how each person functions inside the locker room. And then, you know, you're building a level of trust. Like when you go back to Carolina's firing, I think that's a really good example of, you saw a team that put together a coaching staff of mixed cultures and styles and guys that did not have a ton of familiarity. And when things went horribly bad, there was a lot of, I think you could just say there was a lot of backstabbing that ended up happening on that staff. And it was because you just had stress of people who didn't know how to trust each other. You had failure. You had an owner that was involved on a consistent basis, and it was just horrible all the way through. You don't feel that in Tennessee. I will say that. Like that's you know, it's been a tough season for both Mike and Rand, and yet you don't hear a lot of the same things you heard coming out of Carolina. I mean, like a month ago, it was coming out of Carolina, like, you know, Frank Reich is in, you know, he's in jeopardy here, and a lot of the staff, they don't like him, and they don't like each other, and, you know, the owner's frustrated. You know, it's just not the same stuff you hear coming out of Tennessee. So I will say that on the upside, under stress, I don't feel like we're hearing that, hey, this is just an irreparable, you know, there's some irreparable thing happening right now, and these two guys can't work together.
Charles, what have you thought of the way that Will Levis has played so far this year? You know, we've talked with you about the offensive line, yeah, and how bad that is, the lack of weapons outside of really DeAndre Hopkins in the receiving game. Overall, what have been your impressions of what you've seen from Levis to this point?
There's been slippage, obviously, since that first game. And I think they're, like you said, the line's had a lot to do with that. I think the fact he's a rookie quarterback has had a lot to do with that. You know, you see the sort of moment of frustration where he has, where he's, you know, the sideline thing with Hopkins, and he's animated, and he's had some interception luck, honestly. You know, you've seen some interceptions drop, so I think the turnovers could be worse. Obviously, there are ball security issues against the Colts. You don't want to see a quarterback fumble three times. You know, so there's a lot of things I think that he has to clean up right now. But the upside of this is he's getting a lot of snaps. He's putting enough tape down in terms of like negative stuff that he's got plenty to work on. And he's going to know it. And, you know, I don't think it's so hard to evaluate when a team has a really, really bad situation in offensive line. It becomes really hard to evaluate a quarterback in a way that's really accurate. You just, I mean, in some of the decisions, you can evaluate those. You can say, okay, well, how is he reacting under pressure to this, you know, or is he playing scared, or is he over-relying on some of his talent in terms of like the arm? Can he play within structure? So is he, when I say that, I'm saying, you know, everything's breaking down. Is he just giving into that and saying, you know what, every play, it's just going to be chaos. I'm going to run around and try to make something happen, which is not good. You don't want a rookie quarterback. That's a really bad habit to fall into. So I think that, you know, again, he has struggled at times and over-relied on the arm with some of the decisions that he's made. And that's something that maybe, you know, he'll earn some patience. He'll build a resume of a little more patience once he has some time and isn't under duress almost all the time. You know, the Colts game too, I think Henry going out in that game, like functionally, you want him to have his guys, right? And it's an offense that, again, I think even with the line issues, you want to lean into the Henry being the centerpiece there. So although Spears had, you know, played well, I think once Henry goes out of a game like that, it feels like it's open season on Levis, and there's going to be so much more pressure to make things happen. The ball security things, that doesn't, he should still be better with ball security. There's no doubt about that, but it's a season lumps, man. It really is. But I wouldn't be, I wouldn't be overly concerned about where things have gone with him. I think it's just some difficulty that he was going to face as the line deteriorated, and there's nobody walking through that door once that happens, and you just have to know going into this off season, what do we need to address around him and fix, and is it scheme, is it him, is it personnel? And that's what the off season is going to be about. I think it's when you get beyond Vrabel and like, what's the future there? I think it's an off season where a lot of this is about Will Levis.
Sorry. I was confused with Robbie's hand signal there. Charles, MVP. MVP race. What the heck is going on with the MVP race? I have no idea. We do.
Oh, no, I think it's clarifying. I do. I think, you know, when you look at the Dallas Cowboys schedule, I think it's very, very fair to say that Dak Prescott, if he's going to win the MVP, he's going to win it in the next, you know, stretch. Like, it's, I would say he is the leader right now. And I would say that, you know, Philly, Buffalo, Miami, Detroit, right? That's your next four games. Like, he can win the MVP in the next 4 weeks. And, you know, he's playing absolutely, I personally think the best football of his career. He looks as comfortable, accurate, everything that they've always wanted out of him suddenly feels like it's all coming together since that loss in October to San Francisco. And I think he's the league MVP, and he's just got to show it in the next 4 weeks. Now, if he doesn't, you know, the window's there for Jalen Hurts. I still think the window is potentially there for Brock Purdy. But for Dallas, man, I'll tell you what, this team, in terms of contracts, I don't know, it's kind of frightening where they're heading because, you know, I think Prescott's got nearly a $60 million cap figure next year. And so they're going to have to resolve that by getting an extension done as soon as possible. And he has no tag, no franchise tag, no trade clauses in his deal, which puts all the negotiating in his favor. Now he's hitting an MVP stride going into these contract negotiations. When you talk to high level agents who do quarterback deals and just kind of know how this all goes, they all say the same thing. He's going to be the highest paid player in football next offseason. He's going to be 55 million plus APY when he does his deal. And, you know, maybe be coming out of an MVP season. We'll see how the postseason goes for them. But when you get beyond that, not only is it likely that Dak Prescott's going to be the highest paid player in the NFL, they're trending in a direction where Micah Parsons is going to be the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. Like, we're talking like 35 million plus per APY for an edge rusher. And then CeeDee Lamb has finally ascended to that sort of elite level number one wide receiver that they really hoped he would. Problem with that is those guys now cost $25 to $30 million APY each year. So you're talking about three guys that, in terms of just like a flat financial perspective, are going to account for $110 to $120 million APY each year. I mean, that's, we'll see where the cap goes, but that's such an immense amount of a cap load to have just in three guys. I mean, it could be 35% of your cap. When you look at it from a flat perspective, in those three guys, I mean, it's just, I'm sure Dallas is, you know, they love that, but it's going to cost them in the long run. They're going to end up losing some players. It's a good example.
Because of the salary cap? Salary cap will force them to lose some players. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think
okay. I just want to make sure.
T. Higgins isn't going to be a Bengal. He's not going to be a Bengal next year because of the staff. Because when Joe Burrow, this idea of like, oh, Joe Burrow's going to take a team friendly deal, and then he was like, nah, I can do that. Gonna go ahead and max out my deal. You know, it's there's. I will say about Dallas, like, the personnel department is going to be extremely important the next 5-6 years because they're going to have to start, you know, finding a lot of cheap players. And they're going to have to be okay. Unless they're going to just say, you know what, let's figure this out, spread the money out, we'll do dead drop years, and at some point we'll cease to exist, basically for 3 years once we're past, you know, the prime of some of these guys. It's going to be really difficult for Dallas to deal with all this. They've had some elite – they've made some good picks, and they've had some high-level players that are all really turning into – all-pro sort of like annual all-pro players every season.
Well, more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, Jordan Love has looked awfully good the last three games with the Green Bay Packers. Yeah. And all of a sudden, they have climbed back into a playoff spot. What do you think of the way that he's played and what that could mean for Green Bay as they move forward here?
Wait, is Joe disagreeing with us? What do you Joe?
No, but no, Robbie's a Packers fan. I'm
waving the flag.
I'm stunned he brought up Jordan Love.
Looks good.
Jeez. No, he really looks good, and it's interesting because not only has he looked, I covered the first game in Chicago, and I thought that game alone, I was like, there's some comfortability for him in the offense. There were some misses, though, you know, on some pretty big plays, and you're like, all right, it's probably going to be a season where we see him clean some things up as teams understand how to, you know, what to throw at him defensively to confuse him, things like that. And I think he went through some lumps, and having all these young skill position guys around him was a little bit of a liability the first half of the season. But then as they kind of smoothed out, they got over that hump, there was a little more consistency from some of the young guys. He's looked, I think, as confident as I've ever seen, in that offense, working with Matt LaFleur. And there's an element, too, of I think he's actually coached up some of these young guys. And instead of having an element of, like Rodgers last year, so much frustration working with some of these rookie wideouts. And you haven't seen that with Love. He's been, when you talk to guys in the building, he's very even keeled with a lot of these young guys. And what's really interesting is they're quietly, like, they have a heck of a offensive, like, when just the young pieces. There's so many, you know, Christian Watson, look, he's boom or bust. I still don't know if that's a guy that's going to be a dominant number one receiver. He still drops a lot of passes. But there's no doubt that the talent is there. I think Romeo Doubs, another guy that has really shown some consistency this year of, you know, you look at him and you think, well, at the very least, he could be a really good number two. I think Jaden Reed, the kid out of Michigan State, the rookie, has been fantastic for them. He gives them some offensive flexibility. You know, they can hand the ball off to him at times. He's a pretty tough player. Dontavian Wicks. That's something that's funny. I was talking to a scout about him the other day, and I said, you know, Wicks was a guy who I think he went really late in the draft. I think it was like a fifth-round pick, and I'm like, you know, he's got size, and he just looks really good when you watch him play. And the scout was like, God, man, he's like, you know, I loved him so much. You know, we just didn't know if he could, you know, handle how we, like, function in our offense. So you're talking about, these are all first- and second-year players who I think have a decent ceiling. And then Luke Musgrave, the tight end, another guy who I think is, I like him a lot. He had a lot of injuries in college. But when you watch him play, you're like, if he stays healthy, he looks like one of those guys that can develop into a pass-catching, kind of explosive tight end, which is a little bit of a unicorn in the NFL nowadays. So I think a lot of it, the defense is, what do you mean to talk about? I mean, they've thrown so much draft capital and money into the defense that you would expect eventually those guys, when they stay healthy, are going to turn a corner, especially when, like, Rashawn Gary is on the field playing to his ceiling. They're a really tough team. But to me, when I look at them, I'm like, man, offensively, that quarterback in the wide receiver room and the tight end room, there's a lot that they're going in the right direction. And if you're Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, you have to be beaming right now over that situation. And you also have to be laughing when you hear Aaron Rodgers talking about, why are people leaking to the media? This is not what an organization should do. And I'm sure Brian Gutekunst is like, how come when you were in town and all these leaks about me and how I was handling you, you weren't out there saying, why are people leaking to the media?
Interesting point.
I just had to fit that one in.
Yes. Nice. Yeah, way to get that in there. And this is great because now Robbie can take a week off from trying to fire Matt LaFleur.
I have been trying to do that for a year.
Yeah, you have been. But speaking of that, Charles, here's a transition for you, buddy. Job openings in the NFL. Anything becoming clear? The picture becoming clearer to you?
It seems like it's going to be rough. I'll tell you. I mean, there's a lot of okay. So what? We got the interim, obviously, in Carolina. Washington, I think, is a spot where I think there's a likelihood there's going to be an opening. I actually think Chicago, there's a likelihood there could be an opening there, depending on what they want. I assume they're going to end up with a number of pick in the draft. And, you know, who do you pick? Is it Caleb Williams? Is it Drake May? And then do we want an offensive head coach to pair with this guy? What do we want to do with our front office general manager? So I think Chicago's one I'd look at. New Orleans, I think Dennis Allen, we'll see. The one thing he has going for him is, you know, I do think ownership has an element of patience there. And I think they're a little frustrated with how things have gone this season. Tampa Bay, weirdly, I've heard Tampa Bay is a potential landing spot for Belichick. That's another place that I think you could see an opening. So let's see. That's just the NFC. Look, even Atlanta, I know they're 6-6 right now, but he can't, it's right there for him. Like for Arthur Smith, it's right there. This winning the division and getting into the playoffs and taking another at least micro step forward in the organization. You don't want to see if there's a collapse down the stretch, then I think that you'd have to look at that situation and wonder if maybe there could be a change. New England, I don't know how. To me, I think there's almost no way Bill can be back there next year. However, I have this nightmare in the back of my head where I'm like, watch him not get fired or leave or whatever, however it goes down, and they draft a quarterback, you know, with what could be the second pick in the draft, and he completely turns it around in 2024. I'm like, I think it's the scar tissue of all those years where you kind of question whether it was finally the descent when Tom Brady was there, and we're like, okay, this is it. This is when they fall off the cliff, and so you're still scared to say it. But New England, I just don't see that. To me, looks like a very big, long turnaround, and so it's hard to see Bill there after this season. Let's see, the Raiders, there's the interim. The Jets, I think everybody's safe. People are going to talk about them, but I think, you know, what Rodgers has said, what ownership knows, it was a two-year buy-in. 1 year went horribly wrong. I don't think they're going to disband it after 1 year, so I think they're fine. The Raiders, there's obviously the interim situation. The Chargers, I think the Chargers are a job. I'd be surprised if there was not a change there. It's just been too much money pumped into that offense. That defense and especially for the defense to not have turned a corner by now. I think Brandon Staley is likely out after this season. Buffalo, I can't see them not giving Sean McDermott another season. But let's see how the rest of the season goes. So obviously they're at the water line right now. And if they're under 500, they don't come close to getting into the playoffs. I could see Buffalo potentially having some change over there. So that's a lot of jobs. Whole lot. I didn't count that, but I mean, it has to be near double digits where you could potentially have change this offseason.
Yeah, that's wild. Mm. More with Charles. Go ahead.
Let me give you real quick. Let me give you two names, two kind of interesting names when I've called around and sort of asked about coaching candidates. I don't think he's going to be this cycle. But Drew Petzing, the offensive coordinator for the Cardinals, which is, you know, you're like, wow, that's a bad team. Like, what the heck? That's not a very good record. A lot of people like what they've seen on tape from him this season. So kind of file that in the back of your head about a guy who's probably going to end up on coaching lists, beyond 2024, especially if he can have a fully healthy season with Kyler. But it's wild when you call around, a lot of people talking about him. And then Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings. It's remarkable when you talk to the teams that have played the Vikings, they're like, you should see what he is doing on defense on tape, the things he's throwing at you. It is unbelievably difficult to face the scheme that he is putting out there right now with the Vikings. And I think it was so difficult. I thought it was eye-opening. After they played the Broncos, Sean Payton came out and was like, I'm so glad that week's over. Like, they had such a hard time going into that game preparing for the Flores defense. So, I, you know, in terms of, like, defensive hires, I think Flores' name is going to come back up again, and he's going to be a head coach.
Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this week, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. A lot to react to there from Charles. We'll do that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.